The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Aha! Welcome to a Tuesday, everyone. Not only any Tuesday, today's a big day. It is the 18th of August. It's primary day here in Florida. I've already voted because, you know, I roll that way. I get an absentee ballot. Go figure. I fill it out and we hand deliver it back to the supervisor of elections office. So we've already voted. And now we wait for the November 3rd election. Today is also a big day for we women. 100 years ago today, the 19th Amendment was officially ratified, making it giving women the right to vote. Or as Amy Simon tells us, not giving women. Women won the right to vote. And it was a long-fought, hard battle. Today is Tuesday. Got a laugh as usually here. But it was Laffy's birthday yesterday. And she's got her sons staying at her house because of house stuff. And she wanted to take a day off. So she's taking today off. She's celebrating the anniversary of the 19th Amendment by taking the day off. But Amy Simon herself, the cultural historian that she is, will join us a little later in the hour to talk about this very important day. I mean, we've been talking for so long coming up on the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment. And so Amy Simon will be here. Donald Trump, I almost feel sorry for him if he wasn't such an asshole, because what he did yesterday, there was an announcement that today Donald Trump was going to issue the pardon of all pardons. And he had floated the idea of pardoning Edward Snowden. I thought maybe that's it. But no, you know, he thought he'd, you know, impress the women with this major announcement today. And, oh, my God, here's what he said. And just listen to the reaction of the women who are around him.
I will be signing a full and complete pardon for Susan B. Anthony. She was never pardoned.
They're laughing.
Did you know that?
They're
she
laughing.
She was never pardoned. What took so long?
Oh, my God. Wow. Talk about misplaced efforts. Fucking idiot. So that happened. We also had the start of the first ever virtual political convention. The Democratic National Convention kicked off last night, and it was different. So I will offer you my my analysis of it. But we got to start with a song, something funny, and I've got a couple of them here. I'm trying to figure out which one to play. I think I'm going to play this one. Somebody sent it to me on Facebook. Let me see if I can, I don't know who sent it. Whoever sent it, I apologize for forgetting your name. But a listener, thank you for sending it along, said you got to play this one. The person who produced this video goes by the name on YouTube of The Nikki New Show, N-I-K-K-I-N-O-O, The Nikki New Show. And she just says, this is my first music parody video ever. And I think she's now got like 3 or 4 videos up on her channel. But she got creative, and I thought we would share this one with you. So take it away, Nikki New. On the Nicole Sandler Show. Here we go.
Funny.
Oop.
And who's orange? And he really makes me cringe. And he's best friends with Vladimir Putin. Oh, he lies, cheats, and steals, gets sued and then appeals. He's the worst person on this whole planet.
Ooh. All right. I don't know where. Hold on. We've got music playing. Hold on. We've got audio playing.
I can see it's Satan. Thinks his daughter is hot. His current wife is a robot,
And his two older sons are dumb and dumber. Cannot speak, he cannot read. He's a full-on Karen dweeb. And he stands like he's got a stick up his butt.
Okay, this, I'm sorry. I need to stop this because I can't figure out where the other audio is coming from. This is too weird. Unless it was coming. Oh, I got it. I figured it out. All right, let's try to get back to this. I'm so sorry. I screwed it up already, but we'll try again. Here we go.
It makes me wonder. A big fat blunder. In November he's done. He will throw a big tantrum. And my bet he will leave on a private jet. Probably going overseas. Escaping, running for the trees. Cause we all know this turd is going to jail. Ooh, it makes me wonder. Ooh, he's a big fat blunder.
A crook rotten to the core. Okay. And she's wailing away on what appears to be like a mandolin or something.
And he's buying a first class ticket to the devil.
Oops. Oh, no. Hold on. Wait, once was enough. Once was definitely enough. There you go. The Nikki News Show on YouTube. Her take on Stairway to Heaven. Creative. I will give you that. All right. The rest of the show... Hopefully we'll be less technically challenged than that. So last night, I don't know about you, but I was all ready to get in the virtual convention mode. There are a lot of virtual conventions going on right now. Netroots Nation actually happened this past weekend, all virtually, all online. I didn't participate that way either. I think I did that a decade or so ago. Anyway, so there are all kinds of Progressive Democrats of America are holding their virtual confab this week. And of course, the Democratic National Convention, which was supposed to be in Milwaukee, is now happening everywhere. So, you know, look, I saw the comments ranging from one extreme to the other. last night. And if you'd like to weigh in on what you saw, feel free. I'd love to know what you thought. Because I saw people both going, this is the best thing ever. This is exactly what we need at this moment in history. And others, you know, talking about it being amateur hour. And I found it somewhere in the middle. I thought some of the segments were really good. I thought the using Bruce Springsteen's The Rising was a definite high point. And the video that went along with it, I would play it for you. But we know I only get copyright violated again. So I'm not going to, but I will post the video on the blog at NicoleSandler.com/8-18-20, which is where today's show will be posted in all its glory. So anyway, the video editing was perfect because when it talks, you know, at the beginning as the song is building, it's all the tragedy, it's all the horror that we've experienced for the last almost 4 years. And then as it gets to come on up for the rising, as it's building, all of a sudden it switches to positive images and the Black Lives Matter protests and people coming together. And it gave me a great feeling. It reminded me a little bit of Bernie Sanders' America video. You know, so in as much as you can get there, I think, and I'm trying to stay positive, I really am. I just found, look, all of the stuff about the need to vote Trump out, spot on. It's right there. Where I thought it rang maybe a little hollow was in all the praise of Joe Biden. I still worry. I'm going to be honest with you. I will not lie. I am concerned. There are new polls out today that show that the race tightening. CNN poll has them closing it by 10 points, the gap. So it's now only a 4-point difference. Now, that could be an outlier, and I hope it is. But there are others. And look, as we get closer, the gap will narrow. And then again, who, you know, can you trust the polls? The polls were, it was a done deal 4 years ago. According to all the polls, Hillary Clinton was going to win. It wasn't even going to be close. And actually she did. She won the popular vote by almost 3 million votes. It's funny how, you know, they just don't talk about that. But that's what it was. You know, he could still steal it. Trump is working on every angle to make sure we have as difficult a time voting as possible. So, well, you know the drill. You know what you got to do. And last night, again, there were a lot of mediocre moments. I thought the last half hour of the 10 o'clock hour Eastern, because, of course, everything revolves around the East Coast, was great. And by that last half hour, I mean Bernie Sanders, Michelle Obama. There's your winning ticket for you. Oh, my God. Sanders, Obama, Michelle. I'd be there for that one. Oh, my goodness. All right. I see a phone call coming in. So it's my husband calling. Hello, David. Hello.
This is David calling from the other room.
Yes. And?
So, in regard to last night.
You didn't even watch it last night. You were just bitching about it the whole time.
We need these fucking Republicans like John Kasich and Christy Todd Whitman and Meg Whitman and Slim Whitman and whoever else other Whitman.
Yeah.
We need them like President Jim Crow needs worse hair. Not one single vote will be changed by any of those assholes. And if anybody remembers John Kasich, remember how many anti-abortion pieces of legislation that asswipe signed when he was the governor of Ohio.
Yep.
And remember all the times that neither Meg Whitman nor Christy Todd Whitman nor Slim Whitman ever said anything up to this point about what an asshole Trump is.
Yep. Nope. You're absolutely right.
All of a sudden they see the light and this is going to swing tens of votes because they've got families that will follow.
The Republican segment I thought was asinine. Then again, in reading this morning, what I was told by, you know, the very smart people is that this is not aimed at you and me. This is aimed at those other people. This is aimed at everyone else. If you are, you know, if you're one of the people like me, like you, David, who are bitching about the lack of respect shown to the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, then, you know what, don't worry about it, because this whole thing is not aimed at us. And that's kind of obvious, because if it was aimed at us, they wouldn't be dissing us. They wouldn't be dissing AOC by giving her all of a minute tonight. And what I believe she's doing tonight, she speaks tonight, is introducing or nominating, throwing Bernie Sanders' name into contention before they do the roll call in which Joe Biden will be nominated. But tonight, they're going to go through the charade of the state-by-state roll call where the great state of Wyoming gives two, delegates to Bernie Sanders. And I don't know how they're going to do that on Zoom. This is going to be, you know, just a technical par excellence, I'm sure.
Well, first of all, if this was aimed at people like you and me, Joe Biden wouldn't be the nominee. That's number one. Number two. And if, in fact, this is aimed at Mr. and Mrs. Middle America, again, their minds are not going to be changed by John Kasich and the Whitman families. So it was ridiculous. And by the way, I was not bitching. Yeah. I was commenting critically.
Okay. I'll take that under advisement. Love you too. Bye. That is my husband too. Every now and then, you know, chimes in, and that's okay, because I tell him he can. So anyway, the Republican section was truly infuriating. Although when I saw how they carried it out, I wasn't as pissed off as I was when I heard the news that the Whitman sisters were going to be speaking, and Susan Molinari, a nothing backbencher, former Republican congressman who nobody even remembers. Why? The good news is they gave them each, you know, a few seconds to talk about how you can't possibly vote for Trump and, you know, vote for Biden. John Kasich, though, basically said, if you think Biden is going to give in to those, you know, Democratic socialists, don't worry about it. He won't. He's too smart for that. Hey, John Kasich, I got a song for you. Okay, but we're about positivity today. So let me share with you some of what, for instance, Bernie Sanders said during his speech. And I thought Bernie knocked it out of the ballpark. I thought Bernie Sanders rocked it. He said everything that needed to be said. First, the best line possibly of the night. And this one, you know, is going to have a place of honor on my wall of sound. What did Donald Trump do, Bernie?
Nero fiddled while Rome burned. Trump golfs.
Trump golfs. Yeah. So that's a catch-all. That will serve us well. But Bernie put it into perspective. One of the things that gets the smoke coming out of my ears every day is the way that not only the media bends over backwards to normalize the orange one. If any other president did any of the shit he pulls on a daily basis, it would be, I mean, heads would be exploding everywhere. But because it's Donald Trump, I guess they give him a pass. But Bernie verbalized it.
During this president's term, the unthinkable has become normal.
Yep.
He has tried to prevent people from voting, undermine the U.S. Postal Service, deployed the military and federal agents against peaceful protesters, threatened to delay the election, and suggested that he will not leave office if he loses. This is not normal, and we must never treat it like it is.
No, this is not normal, and we must never treat it like it is. Bernie Sanders spoke truth last night, and he said things that a lot of maybe his staunchest followers don't agree with. But listen to Bernie. He's got the wisdom. He's got the experience. He sees how everything that every basis of what this country stands for is being whittled away at by this imposter in the White House. So here's Bernie's final case. And not his final case, because he'll be doing this through November 3rd, but making a strong case for why you must, vote for Joe Biden. Whoops.
My friends, I say to you, to everyone who supported other candidates in the primary, and to those who may have voted for Donald Trump in the last election, the future of our democracy is at stake. The future of our economy is at stake. The future of our planet is at stake.
Yeah.
We must come together, defeat Donald Trump, and elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as our next president and vice president. My friends, the price of failure is just too great to imagine.
The price of failure is too great to imagine. So Bernie was awesome. I thought it was great. I love that he's standing in front of all those logs that, you know, he chopped that wood himself, because he's Bernie Sanders, damn it. The only person who I thought outshone Bernie is the star of this convention already, Michelle Obama. Always liked her better than her husband. I think we would be in much better shape right now if she were the nominee. But Michelle Obama, well, she laid it all out in plain talk.
Let me be as honest and clear as I possibly can. Donald Trump is the wrong president for our country. He has had more than enough time to prove that he can do the job, but he is clearly in over his head.
You think?
He cannot meet this moment. He simply cannot be who we need him to be for us. It is what it is.
It is what it is. Oh, I love that she said it is what it is. And then she addressed her comment from the last time she dealt with or spoke publicly about Trump and his, you know, his ugly way of dealing with people. The fact that he's a lowlife piece of shit, that he treats people like crap, that he calls them names like he's in, you know, fourth grade. Remember Michelle Obama famously said, when they go low, we go high? Well, she updated that a little bit.
A lot of people have asked me, when others are going so low, does going high still really work?
Does it?
My answer, going high is the only thing that works. Because when we go low, when we use those same tactics of degrading and dehumanizing others, we just become part of the ugly noise that's drowning out everything else.
Yeah.
But let's be clear. Yeah. Going high does not mean putting on a smile and saying nice things when confronted by viciousness and cruelty.
Uh-huh.
Going high means taking the harder path. It means scraping and clawing our way to that mountaintop. Going high means standing fierce against hatred while remembering that we are one nation under God. And if we want to survive, we've got to find a way to live together and work together across our differences. And going high means unlocking the shackles of lies and mistrust with the only thing that can truly set us free, the cold, hard truth.
The cold, hard truth, something that Donald Trump wouldn't know if he tripped over it and fell face first into a pile of it. He wouldn't know what to do with it. But she was spot on. So going high doesn't mean staying silent, doesn't mean letting them, you know, pelt you with bullshit and not fighting back. Going high means speaking truth to power. Now, going high also means getting off your ass and voting.
A presidential election can reveal who we are, too. And 4 years ago, too many people chose to believe that their votes didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were fed up. Maybe they thought the outcome wouldn't be close. Maybe the barriers felt too steep, whatever the reason.
Or they didn't like Hillary.
In the end, those choices sent someone to the Oval Office who lost the national popular vote by nearly 3 million votes.
Yep.
In one of the states that determined the outcome, the winning margin averaged out to just 2 votes per precinct. 2 votes. And we've all been living with the consequences. When my husband left office with Joe Biden at his side, we had a record-breaking stretch of job creation. We'd secured the right to health care for 20 million people. We were respected around the world, rallying our allies to confront climate change. And our leaders had worked hand in hand with scientists to help prevent an Ebola outbreak from becoming a global pandemic. 4 years later, the state of this nation is very different. More than 150,000 people have died, and our economy is in shambles because of a virus that this president downplayed for too long.
Touché.
It has left millions of people jobless.
Yep.
Too many have lost their health care. Too many are struggling to take care of basic necessities like food and rent. Too many communities have been left in the lurch to grapple with whether and how to open our schools safely. Internationally, we've turned our back, not just on agreements forged by my husband, but on alliances championed by presidents like Reagan and Eisenhower.
Go figure. Michelle Obama was just spot on last night. She was great. I don't know what role we need for her in the new administration, but I hope she takes on an active one, because I think she's the most trusted woman in America right now. All right, quick timeout, and then we'll be back with Amy Simon of She's History to talk about today's big centennial anniversary of the 19th Amendment, the woman's right to vote. So I believe we are in commercials on the Progressive Voices Network. While they're in a commercial, let's listen to and watch, if you're watching on video. And by the way, we're streaming on Facebook Live, on Twitch, twitch.tv/Nicole Sandler Show, on Periscope, periscope.tv/Nicole Sandler. And I think that's all. I don't know. We're experimenting with all these different streaming platforms while I'm suspended from streaming live on YouTube. So there are lots of ways to find the video. And what I've been doing also is posting the video of the show on the blog where I post the audio podcast each day. So for those who like to watch, it'll be there too. It's each day, NicoleSandler.com/ followed by the date. So today would be 8-18-20. So that's the format. Got it? Good. All right. The Midas Touch, they're back. They've got under Trump's skin yet again. Here's their latest from the brothers Macellus. Here we go.
He's been lying to you.
After 3.5 years, do you regret at all the lying you've done to the American people?
That who has done?
You have done. Tens of thousands.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
He's a cheat.
A lot of people are concerned that it looks like post office boxes are being removed ahead of the November election.
If we don't make a deal, that means they don't get the money. That means they can't have universal mail-in voting. They just can't have it.
He seems so much happier when he's with other people. What happened? He's just not the man you remember taking a chance on. What happened to the good times? Were there good times?
Yeah, no.
There's only one option left.
Yeah?
America, it's time to divorce Trump.
You think?
Ooh. Midas Touch is responsible for the content of this advertising.
America, it's time to divorce Trump. Okay, that's one way to put it. Works for me. Hey, whatever gets you there, you know? All right. You know what? Let's bring back our friends from the Progressive Voices, because I need to get to Amy Simon, because we got a lot of territory to cover as we celebrate the women's vote centennial. So,
you're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network and NicoleSandler.com.
It's time for Amy Simon of She's History, the most dangerous women in American history, then and now.
'Cause I'm a woman.
right. Well, my old friend Amy Simon is here because how could we possibly commemorate the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment without talking to Amy Simon of She's History, the most dangerous women in America then and now. So happy, what is today, Ratification Day?
Well, Nicole, thank you for asking that great question. Yeah, August 18th, 1920 was the day that the final vote was cast in Tennessee and the 19th Amendment became ratified. And then on August 26th, which is Women's Equality Day, that's the day it was adopted. And that's the day that Bella Abzug, our fabulous, late, brilliant congresswoman from New York, petitioned the government to proclaim August 26th as Women's Equality Day. So there's several celebrations, but August 18th, that's the day that it became legal. Yay! And it was a mom. It was a mom that, you know, in this time when voting is everything, and we always hear one vote makes the difference, it was one vote that made the difference. It was Harry Byrne, a young kid from Tennessee, whose mother sent him a telegram saying, hey, go vote for suffrage, put the rat in ratification. Famous telegram among historians.
Did it really say put the rat in ratification?
Yeah, it wow. really did.
That's funny.
Yeah, and she mentioned Carrie Chapman Catt. So there's a couple of fabulous females. So we're celebrating because, you know, we hear how, oh, women got the vote. Women didn't get the vote. They won it. They fought it tooth and nail. I mean, I'm going to just start off by talking about a little lady named Alice Paul, who was a Jersey girl. So this will give you a little idea, listeners out there, of a little bit of the struggle that women, and men also, but women went through to win us the vote. This is what happened to Alice Paul. She went on a hunger strike. She was in prison. So here you go. When the forcible feeding was ordered, I was taken from my bed, carried to another room, and forced into a chair bound with sheets and sat upon bodily by a fat murderer, whose duty it was to keep me still. Then the prison doctor, assisted by two women attendants, placed a rubber tube up my nostrils and pumped liquid food through it into the stomach twice a day for a month, from November 1st to December 1st. This was done. Wow. A month.
Wow.
Every day for a month. That speech was in regard to what happened to her in England. So Alice Paul was born in New Jersey, but she went over to England in her young 20s, and she met up with Emmeline Pankhurst, who was a suffragette. Now, there's always, the suffragette is what's called a person in England who's fighting for the vote. In America, they're suffragists. It's semantics, but that's what it is. So Alice Paul was actually a suffragist. Anyway, she went over there, she got indoctrinated, she saw the inequality and how women were being kept down, and she started hanging out with Emmeline Pankhurst, who started a group to win the vote in England, and they weren't being heard, so they ended up going around smashing windows. They were called militant suffragettes. Wow. And there was a movie a few years ago called Suffragette, and Meryl Streep, of course, played Emmeline Pankhurst. But the women, when they weren't heard, they decided to get, you know, militant, and they would smash windows. The whole plan was that they would get arrested, they would go to jail, they would go on hunger strikes, they would win the support of the country, and that is exactly what happened. They got the vote first. So Alice Paul came back to America, and she did it here. Didn't work so well. Took a really long time.
Then it was August 18th, 1920, that the 19th Amendment was ratified nationally. So women finally won the right to vote.
Yeah. And you know, what went on up before then, I mean, there's all kinds of different votes that were taken. Wilson, who was completely coerced into giving women the vote when he first came into office, this is one of my favorite stories that I tell in the play. Alice Paul had returned from England, and she organized the National Women's Party and decided, she was a brilliant strategist. So when President Wilson got elected, he came to Washington for his inauguration. But the day before, she organized this parade down Pennsylvania Avenue. It was the biggest parade in history. All the women wore white. She organized it forever. Women walked across the country to get there, and men. And I always make the point that there were men that helped women win the vote, and there were women that did not want it. They did not want it. You know, they were the Phyllis Schlafly's of the era. So I always want to include, we couldn't have done it without the men. You know, we love the men. Some people call them suffragettes.
Aw, suffragettes.
Isn't that cute? Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
All right.
So she organized this parade, and President, well, he had no idea. So he gets off the train at Union Station. He's expecting this big crowd, and he's like, where are all the people? Mm-hmm. Oh, they're all on the avenue watching Alice Paul's suffrage parade.
Ooh.
500,000 people watched this parade, Nicole. It was the largest parade in Washington history, but I will say the women suffered terribly. They were, you know, they had lit cigars thrown at them. They were yelled at. They were mobbed. I mean, they were literally mobbed, thrown to the ground. And the police, they just looked the other way.
Well, something's never changed, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Something never changed. Yeah. So then as years went on, Alice Paul tried to sit down, and she did sit down with Wilson a couple times, but you know, he wasn't going for it. And then when the war started and he was granting, you know, fighting for liberty for, you know, America, she started putting posters and signs up and picketing, you know, what about the women's liberty, Mr. President? How long must women wait for liberty? And again, if your lovely listeners want to go Google this stuff, you should see the images because they're very powerful. There was a group called the Silent Sentinels. These were women that stood outside the White House, all wearing white. And again, if you look at the images of the history of suffrage, white and purple are colors that women wore to show their support.
And that's why. Let me bring when this the newest Congress in 2018 first met, all the women wore white, and we've seen all the Democratic women in the House of Representatives on a number of occasions. They did it, I think, at the last State of the Union address as well. They all wear white. This is a sign. Yeah. This is a symbol. This is a nod to the suffragist movement.
Yeah, makes me cry. I get very emotional because it was so special. Well, so there was a group that stood in front of the White House for 18 months, wearing white, holding their signs. They were called the Silent Sentinel.
Okay.
Well, this was during World War I, and so the women were seen as unpatriotic, and Wilson got enough of it, and he had them arrested. Now, they were peaceful. Oh, he had them arrested. They were charged with obstructing sidewalk traffic, but they were physically, literally thrown into jail. They were brutalized. I mean, the pictures that you see, and it was called the Owakin War Workhouse, where they were thrown into. And that's when Alice Paul, and she had a partner, a lovely, you know, there were many, many people that helped her. She wasn't the only one, but Lucy Burns was sort of her partner. And Alice Paul, she was from New Jersey and this big suffragist, but she was actually very refined and very soft-spoken. And Lucy Burns was not. She was like the opposite. So they made a fantastic pair. But they both, you know, suffered. And that's when Alice Paul went on a hunger strike. But what happened, there was a woman who, a note was slipped out to somebody that came to visit, a rich woman who had power and connections. And she got the information to the newspapers. And the newspapers, hello, journalism, started to report on what was going on. And they also did this after the suffrage parade. So America was starting to wake up. And you have to remember, back 100 years ago, we didn't have, you know, television, phones, you know, nothing like that. It was all newspapers and word of mouth. But the word got out. And so the sentiment of the country began to change. And that was the beginning of the, you know, the win, which took forever. But I want to also talk about someone else. Her name is Carrie Chapman Catt.
Okay.
And she and Alice Paul were not together. Carrie Chapman Catt wanted to go state by state to win the vote. And Alice Paul did not. She wanted to do it federally with Wilson. But what I love about Carrie Chapman Catt, and she really made it happen. I mean, between the two of them, they kind of fought each other, but they ended up, you know, getting it together. But when she was married once and her husband died, and then she remarried a guy and she had a prenup. And the prenup said, for 4 months out of the year, she had to work on suffrage.
The prenup said, for 4 months out of the year, Carrie Chapman Catt got to work on suffrage or had to work on suffrage? Or both?
She had to. You know, she said, that's part of our deal. If you want to marry me for 4 months, I'm on the road. And, You know, Nicole, you interviewed Elaine
Weiss.
The right. Women's Hour.
The Women's Hour.
Yes. Actually, her book, which I have right here, and I love so much, and you had her on your show, you lucky ducky. This book is literally about the year leading up to it, and it's all about Tennessee. Her whole book is about Tennessee, because Tennessee was the last state to ratify. You need 35 states to ratify. And like I said at the beginning, it was Harry Byrne from Tennessee who got the telegram from his mom and, you know, got there. But, you know, there was a lot of wonderful congressmen who helped vote in Tennessee and other states to help the ratification. There's stories that there was one congressman, his wife was dying, but she was a suffragist, and he left her deathbed to go vote. Oh. There was another congressman who was carried on a stretcher so he could vote. And I just think, you know, it's just so important to understand how, you know, one vote counts. We hear it all the time, but it's so true. One vote counts. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about when women really stood up, the first woman to stand up and ask a body to vote, and that was Elizabeth Cady Stanton, which people don't know so much about her. She and Susan B. Anthony, which people do know about. You know, this is five women that we read about in our books, but it is getting better. So Elizabeth Cady Stanton was born in 1818 into a very rich, privileged life. Her cousin Garrett Smith owned half of New York. Her father was a lawyer, a judge, a congressman. Huh. But he was also pretty much a sexist. And I'm so glad he was, because he pissed her off so much that she spent her life trying to prove to him that women could do as much as men. But anyway, she ended up marrying a guy. Well, first she fell in love with her sister's husband, which is a really fun story.
There was a lot going on back then. I mean, look, I'm sorry. Hamilton, of course, everybody is, you know, jumping on since we've seen it now on Disney Plus. And Alexander Hamilton had a thing with his wife's sister as well. I guess, you know, some things never change throughout history, huh?
Some things never change, yeah. So her sister's husband taught her how to read. He taught her how to play chess and manage a horse and all kinds of things. And he fell in love with her and he asked her to get married and run away. Let's run away and get married. She's like, no, I can't do that to my sister. Right. Sorry, Charlie. So then she meets Henry Stanton, this guy. And, you know, she would go hang out at her cousin Garrett's home where Frederick Douglass would hang out, where there was an underground railroad.
I hear he's doing some wonderful things.
Yeah. I heard he's doing well too. Trump seems to think he's doing. Actually, I have to say that after Trump said that a couple of years ago, I put that in my play, and I always got such a good laugh. People were like, ah, yeah, really, it's actually not funny. But.
Oh, we digress. Sorry.
We digress. So she was indoctrinated and, you know, inspired and enlightened by hanging out with her cousin Garrett Smith, where he was harboring slaves in the Underground Railroad. And then she meets this guy named Henry Stanton, who's 10 years older than her. He's this great dancer. He's an anti-slavery agent. He goes around the country making speeches. So she falls in love with him. Her father and Edgar, her sister's husband, they were like, oh, you can't marry him. This anti-slavery thing is a passing fancy, and he can't support you. So she breaks it off. But then Henry gets invited to this World Anti-Slavery Convention in England and gets offered a job in Europe. So they elope. And she elopes, little badass Elizabeth Cady Stanton. She's like 23 years old. She gets on this boat to go over to the 1840 World Anti-Slavery Convention in England. Now she meets another badass named Lucretia Mott, another woman we don't know enough about, who was an ordained minister. She was a Quaker. She was a famous abolitionist. She started the first female anti-slavery society in Philadelphia, because she would go to these anti-slavery meetings and she'd say, excuse me, might I have a word? And then the men would say, quiet, woman, stand in the back, let the men do the talking. So she got pissed off and started her own society. And then she gets invited over to England to this anti-slavery convention. Well, she meets Elizabeth Cady Stanton on the boat. Now, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, she's pissing off all the men because she's beating them at chess, which I love. Mm-hmm. And she's also pissing everyone off because she's shocking people, because she's calling her husband Henry instead of Mr. Stanton.
Really?
They
referred to their spouses by that formal
in public
manner.
Yeah. in public, and Henry was there with his boss, and his boss was like, yo, man, get that woman under control. And Henry's like, oh, I find her quite enchanting. Anyway, she meets Lucretia Mott, who's shocking everybody by preaching to promiscuous audiences. That means men and women.
Oh.
Back then in the 1800s, you did not, you know, Anne Hutchinson did that in the 1600s, and they banished her. I mean, she was gone.
Wow.
So there's Elizabeth on the boat, doing her thing, running around, you know, playing chess, beating people, saying, Henry, Henry, and there's Lucretia Mott. Well, they meet, they bond, they get to England, and Elizabeth, she's like enamored with Lucretia Mott, who's 22 years older than her. Now, she goes off to this big meeting. The reason they go there is to attend this very important meeting about slavery. Well, the women are told they cannot be on the floor, and they have to go behind the curtain. Now, meanwhile, the part I forgot to mention about Elizabeth on her honeymoon was she wrote in her diary how much she was enjoying the pleasures of the sex. Pleasures of the flesh.
Oh, the pleasures of the flesh. Got it.
Elizabeth Cady Stanton enjoyed the pleasures of the flesh. This is in her diary.
So. You go, girl.
Yeah, you know, this is the part that I love to bring up when I do my play or when I talk about women. Because, you know, you read about history and it can be quite true. Women, they were into sex. They were into the, you know, they like to have a good time.
Of course.
And we don't read about that.
Right.
So, yeah, she had 7 kids at the end of it.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah. I mean, which wasn't even a lot in those days. Anyway, so they get to England, and she doesn't get to go to the meeting because she wasn't a delegate. Lucretia Mott was. But Lucretia Mott, you know, they go to this meeting. They're told to go behind a curtain, and there were a few men that stood with them to be supportive from America. And so Lucretia, and the whole time they're there, Elizabeth is hanging out with Lucretia, and Henry's like, yo, you know, where are you? Oh, I'm with Mrs. Mott. I'm with Mrs. Mott. Oh, Henry's getting so vexed because I'm spending so much time with you, Mrs. Mott. But, you know, she mentored her. Lucretia ended up mentoring her. Anyway, Lucretia comes back from the meeting, and Elizabeth's like, so how'd it go? and Lucretia's Mott like, well, we had to go behind the curtain. And the men had to vote. They took a vote. They actually argued half the day about what to do about the women. Meanwhile, this meeting was supposed to be about slavery, but the women were, you know, it was the woman question. Turns out Henry actually voted against the women. So when Lucretia Mott tells Elizabeth Cady Stanton, actually, your husband voted against it, Elizabeth's like, no more pleasures of the flesh for him. One of my favorite parts of the story. Anyway, so this is when Elizabeth got it into her head and says, we have to have our own convention, our own meeting, and 8 years later, they do. It's a longer story, but Elizabeth is now back in New York. This is 8 years after this London anti-slavery convention. Lucretia Mott goes to New York to visit her sister in Waterloo, New York, and she gets invited to this little tea party. Well, guess who gets invited? Elizabeth Cady Stanton. She lived right next door in a little town called Seneca Falls.
Yep.
So they hadn't seen each other in 8 years, and they're like, oh, this is not, how are you? Oh, Elizabeth, how are you? And she's like, oh, I have all these kids. I'm just suffering from mental hunger and mental and domestic drudgery. We must have our own meeting. And they decide then and there that they're going to have their own convention. And this is such an important moment because it was Seneca Falls in 1848 that they had their meeting. And lots of men came, men and women, all kinds of people. And that's when they created a document called the Declaration of Sentiments. And they modeled it after the Declaration of Independence. You know, the Founding Fathers did a list of grievances against King George.
Yeah.
They just substituted women, you know, men for King George. And the first thing they said was all men and women are created equal. But what was really important at this meeting was Elizabeth Cady Stanton stood up and said, resolution number 9, because they were going through the resolutions, and they got to number 9, and she said, women need to vote. And everyone's like, no way. No way. It's too much. Lucretia Mott's like, Lizzie, she called her Lizzie. That was her pet name for her. Lizzie, you're going to make the convention ridiculous. But she would not let it go. She's like, she had a great speech about it, and then who stood up next to her and said she's right? Frederick Douglass.
Ooh, there you go. See, he's doing great things. I hear great things. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, they passed it. They passed it and they published the Declaration of Sentiments. in the New York Herald, and all hell broke loose because they talked about all these equalities that the women want. And they called it the most shocking and unnatural incident. This was the headline, the most shocking and unnatural incident ever recorded in the history of womanity. Now, what the hell is womanity?
Womanity?
We don't know.
Like,
but you know,
woman, ID. Yeah, okay. Go on. All right.
Anyway, just to show you how the reaction, you know, women, they just didn't think, you know, women were thought to have tiny brains and they needed to be at home. But this convention in Seneca Falls was a very, the tea table that they used to write the declaration on, it's in the Smithsonian.
Nice.
Okay, so that's yay. But all these women's rights conventions started popping up all over the country. And in 1850, and by the way, Susan B. Anthony wasn't even at Seneca Falls. People seem to think they were together forever. They didn't meet until 1851 in Seneca Falls. Hmm. Susan had heard about the convention and all that, but it was in 1851 that there was this very important convention in Akron, Ohio, and that's when Sojourner Truth made her famous speech, Ain't I a Woman's speech.
Sure.
And Elizabeth Cady Stanton was friends with Sojourner Truth. She stayed at her home at one point. So the first time that, you know, women were truly thinking about getting the legal right to vote was in 1848. Seneca Falls is just a really big turning point in women's history.
Without a doubt. And, you know, I'm trying to remember when it was. It was one of his big speeches where Barack Obama invoked Seneca Falls, which, you know, hasn't happened with other male politicians. I mean, it's finally, it only took about 100 years, but it's finally being recognized for what it
was,
right? The struggle.
Yeah, no. You know, people always say, oh, we're making progress. And I'm like, yeah, well, when you start under the ground, you can only go up. So, right. Yes, I'm grateful for the progress. But I will say, when my daughter Ruby was in eighth grade, and I was, you know, going to this, I was lucky to be a stay-at-home mom at the time. And I would go up to school and volunteer and get pissed off because I wouldn't see pictures of women anywhere. But she had a really progressive teacher. And I created a show for middle school. And we did a whole thing about Seneca Falls. And Seneca Falls is actually in what, you know, it was in her book.
Good.
But the curriculum for is different all over the country. That's a whole nother story about our curriculum of our history books and all of our books.
Absolutely.
And there's a book by Howard Zinn. You know about Howard Zinn?
People's History of the United States.
Well, it's being taught in some of the schools now.
Good. As it should.
Yes.
Howard Zinn was a genius, and everyone should have to read that. Yeah. And here we are, 100 years after the ratification of the 19th Amendment today, we have a woman of color, a black woman, on the ticket running to be the, you know, vice president of the United States. So we've come a long way, baby.
I did want to say a little something about Shirley Chisholm, who has inspired Kamala Harris and Maxine Waters and all kinds of wonderful. She was quite amazing. And she ran for president in 1872. First of all, she was the first black woman elected.
Ran in 1872? 1972.
I'm sorry. 1972. You're right. Yeah.
I was going to say, I didn't think she was that old. Yeah. Go ahead.
She was the first woman elected to, first black woman elected to Congress, mm-hmm. you know. And the first black woman in the Senate was Carol Moseley Braun from Chicago in like 1990.
Right.
And I always love the connection because Kamala Harris is only the second woman of color in the Senate.
Wow. I did not realize that either, but what a long, there was in between. Wow.
Yeah. When she made her acceptance speech, Shirley Chisholm, and she knew she wasn't going to get it, but she did it anyway. Thank God. And here's just a little bit of what she said. I stand before you today as a candidate for the Democratic nomination for the presidency of the United States of America. I am not the candidate of Black America, although I am Black and proud. I am not the candidate of the women's movement of this country, although I am a woman, and I'm equally proud of that. I am not the candidate of any political policies or facts or special interests. I stand here now without endorsements from many big-name politicians or celebrities or any other kind of prop. I do not intend to offer you the tired cliches that have too long been accepted as part of our political life. I am the candidate of the people of America.
Nice. You know, we talked about it very briefly when it was on. There was a TV miniseries called Mrs. America. Right, which was good. I think it was a little too kind to Phyllis Schlafly, but that aside, it really, you know, Shirley Chisholm was spotlighted, and we need to see more about her because history doesn't tell us enough about Shirley Chisholm. And again, all these women are the reason that Amy, years ago, I don't, how long has it been now that you've been working on She's History?
Well, I started, actually, I wrote my first essay in 2007.
Wow.
When Hillary Clinton began her campaign. And it was called Hillary Ran. And I read it at a story salon here in Los Angeles. And it was just an essay about her and Carol Moseley, but a few other women. And people were like so into it. And I said, oh, but then I tried to get a job. And we had the 2008, the whole, you know, economy crash. And being a woman of a certain age, I was in my 50s. I couldn't get hired. I couldn't find a job. I couldn't support my girls. I was going crazy, and I ended up writing a play.
Right. And so She's History has been in development this whole time, and it went from a one-woman show to a multi-person cast to a...
Just to clarify, yes, I started to work on an all-female, full-cast version of this play because, you know, doing a solo show is one thing, but it's hard to get the word out. And also, there are so few plays that are written by women, about women, directed, you know, the whole play is all women, and women play all the roles. In this version, I have literally 38 roles, and they're all played by women. There are men, there are children. I mean, some of the roles are one scene, one line, but still. And I've been developing it, and I was supposed to be doing it this summer in several different places, but, you know, COVID kind of crashed that, but I'll do it. You know, we'll get there.
And people can find out more about it by going to sheshistory.com. You've got wonderful, fabulous female facts, stories about so many of these women, some that we have not touched on today, you know, like Victoria Woodhull, you know, which is one of our favorite stories. And it goes on. And Amy Simon, you have brought us over the last 10 years, oh my God, these great stories of our founding mothers, the women that we are not taught about, our children are not taught about in schools. And that was the reason this began. And here we are today, 100 years from the ratification of the 19th Amendment that gave women, that women won the right to vote. They didn't give women anything. Women fought for it. That's a point that you stress over and over again.
Yes. And as Gloria Steinem and many other wonderful people have said, nobody gives away power. You have to take it. So I just want to mention, Nicole, I did send you a link for your listeners to click to see all the celebrations happening starting right now for the rest of the month about the celebration of the centennial. And they can just click and see what's going on. There's all kinds of amazing stuff going on.
Right. And I'll put the link on the blog at NicoleSandler.com with today's show /8-18-20. That's where it's posted. You can also visit NationalWomen'sHistoryAlliance.org, NationalWomen'sHistoryAlliance.org for more information, but I will put the link on the blog as well.
You know, I have to just end with one thing. You briefly mentioned Victoria Woodhull. In 1872, she ran for president. She was literally the first woman to want to really run for president, but she was too young to be on the ballot. And she ended up in jail on election day because she had a newspaper where she printed stories about men raping women. So they put her in jail. But I'm sitting here in my apartment. It's a heat wave in California. I don't have air conditioning. I have one little air conditioner. And the minute I start feeling sorry for myself, I start thinking about Victoria Woodhull, who's stuck in a jail in the middle of a New York City summer wearing 3 yards of petticoats and every other thing. I mean, what women went through. Literally, they were killed, they were hanged, they were banished, they were just, so, you know, I don't want to complain too much.
Right. It's easy for us to complain about what we have going on, but we look at the stories that we were not taught in school about the women who came before us, who paved the way so we could we could vote, so we could go to the polls on November 3rd or vote by mail long before then, to oust the most dangerous president in history from the White House and set the country back, the world back on a path to sanity, semi-sanity,
something. Yeah, but mobilize. But also, you know, I think, you know, I have to find the silver lining somewhere that, you know, we have mobilized, especially our young people. And, you know, the social justice, the Black Lives Movement, all of it, you know, we're in a reckoning, as everyone says. And women have a lot to do with it. So
absolutely.
Right on.
It's all about the women. Amy Simon, happy ratification day. You know, it feels like we've been leading up to this day for 10 years now. So
yeah,
couldn't let the day go by without acknowledging the enormity of what we are commemorating today. And you know, begging everybody, do not take that vote for granted. Right now, we have someone trying to take it away from us. All the more reason why we need to realize just how precious it is and how important it is and how every single vote matters.
Every single one.
Amy Simon, thank you, honey. Happy ratification.
Thank you.
All right.
Happy ratification day.
And happy grandmothering. We mentioned it on the show last week that your baby granddaughter, your first granddaughter was born, yeah. Scotty Sloan. Yeah.
Yes.
Congratulations.
My daughter, who literally inspired my entire playwriting career, is now a mom. And I hope her daughter does some great stuff.
It's amazing how, you know, the circle of life continues, because yeah. I remember, I mean, the first night you and I bonded was thanks to another mutual friend of ours, Sue, that I came over to your apartment in Marina Del Rey, and Rose was a newborn, and we bonded over yeah. Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And here we are, you know, quarter yeah. of a century later, and Rose is
yeah.
her own baby.
And, you know, it's also because of wonderful journalists, reporters, whatever you want to call yourself, Nicole. You are doing such important work. You really are. I mean, every day you come on and you enlighten and teach and piss everybody off that needs to be pissed off, and good for you. And it is really my honor to be on your show and be your friend and watch you do what you do. You're one of the badasses, and we need you.
Oh, thank you. Well, you are too. And I'm happy to call you my friend and grandma. All right, Grandma, go vote, and I'll have happy ratification day, and I'll talk to you later. Thank you, Amy Simon.
Bye.
And I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great night. Bye.